Man, long day in the office.
Oh, it's been the longest, Steven.
But it's only going to get longer when we do this pod episode.
We have a pod episode?
Yeah, and it starts right now. Oh. What's going on, Titans? Welcome back to another episode of Daily Titan Podcast, or DT Pod for short. And in today's episode, we're going to be breaking down volume 118, issue number 11 of the Daily Titan Student Newspaper, or in this week's case, the Wellness Tabloid. And on theme with our Wellness Tabloid, we're going to be talking about impaired driving as our top story. We're going to follow that up with our news story about the ASI food pantry. We're also going to be talking about a recent cooking event that happened on campus, and then we're going to cap it off with a brief discussion about women's soccer. Stay tuned, Titans. And before I forget, I'm one of your co-hosts and layout editor, Kabir Kansar, and I'm joined with
your other co-host and assistant news editor, Damiana Gabriel. Up next, we have an opinion written by none other than our own editor-in-chief, Jaden Lovelady. Hello, welcome back.
Hello, good to be here.
This week, your article was an opinion that you wrote about kind of driving while impaired and the like deterrence methods that campuses and universities use to like try and prevent students from not only like drinking and driving, but also like smoking and driving.
Yeah. It kind of goes over how I think that like there could be a more like proactive way that schools approach this. And I wasn't just like talking about like college campuses, though I think that obviously like statistically is the bigger margin of people getting into those types of accidents, but you know, high schools too. Like, I think a lot of like, I mean, this is my personal take, this wasn't featured as much in the article, but I think a lot of like PSAs and stuff like that, like old ways that they used to inform us of like the dangers of drunk driving, like the shock factor has kind of like ebbed since social media has kind of like brought about shock factor in our everyday lives. Yeah, this article kind of started with the fact that like I personally think it's become extremely normalized to get behind the wheel while impaired, and that could be drinking or smoking weed and stuff like that. And it's just, like, I feel like I've seen that a lot in, like, as a student or, like, someone in this age range. Like, I know a lot of people who just do it very casually.
I think, yeah, most people do. Like, that's kind of a phenomenon that's kind of, I think, more observable in college. But, like, obviously, it's, like, kind of a problem for just like people who can drive, like whether that be like beyond college, before college, like in high school.
Yeah, and it's definitely like I wanted to explore more of that and like have my interviews before I fully outlined like my call to action in this piece, because I wanted to kind of like talk to experts about if this was like a maybe a Southern California thing, or is it a California thing because, you know, like weed is legalized here. And it's also like, you know, it's like the cliche that like, you know, this is the beach, people smoke weed, blah blah blah, like type thing. But like, not that I subscribe to that or I believe that to be true, but I know that that's like a narrative push on California. So I wanted to see if it was like something like, I guess, local to SoCal, or if this was like more of a national crisis, or if there's been an uptick or like not of drinking and driving because
Definitely.
How did your angle change as you sort of went about getting these interviews done?
Yeah, so I actually talked to Sean Hogan first, an associate professor of social work, and he has, like, a concentrated knowledge on substance abuse and treatment specifically. So I wanted to talk to him a little bit about, you know, what I just told you guys, like, is this more of a quote-unquote local issue, or is this kind of something we've seen nationally? And he kind of went over how it is a something we see no matter where it is in the United States. Like, drinking and driving is a really bad crisis that has, like, had its ebbs and flows, but it also is, you know, always going to be an issue. But the certain permissibility about our, like, social culture here does have poor implications on people's, like, ability to make rational decisions while impaired or while intoxicated.
Yeah, I thought a really interesting moment in the article was, I think, when you were talking with this professor and you were talking about how kind of, like, when you decriminalize something, like, in this case, marijuana, it kind of, like, adds, like, an openness for, like, people who want to, like, partake in, like, smoking marijuana, or it kind of just, like, makes it seem more permissible to do. So then it kind of, like, ebbs into other, like, societal factors.
Yeah, that was definitely the language that he used, is, like, permissible and permission and stuff like that. By legalizing marijuana usage, it kind of, like, it equates to being normal a lot to young adults, is what he was touching on. That it, like, you know, driving is a normal practice and smoking weed is now a normal practice that people do recreationally. So why it just kind of puts them on, like, the same level subconsciously, is what he was kind of touching on. But what was interesting is that when we were talking about, like, more effective ways, like, schools can take, because that's really what I wanted to focus on, is, like, in a culture that is, like, you know, it has a ever-evolving view on substance use, because, like, you know, modern medicine can reveal, like, certain things and blah, 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 mm-hmm. and, like, but it just, like, changes, but it does. A
comparatively, like, lax one?
Yeah, I think that's my personal take, is that mm-hmm. the social culture in Southern California is really permissible about, you know, impaired driving. But he was touching on that the peer aspect is way more effective on young adults than an authoritative one.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really interesting, and it stuck out to me, so I did a little bit more research on that, and I brought it up in my other interviews with students to see, like, I was asking people, like, do you think there's something that, like, schools or campuses could do to, like, better inform, like, as a student, the dangers of drinking and driving? All of my interviews said the same thing of, like, I feel like if I saw someone at my level, like a peer, talk about it with their experience, it would, like, help me more, which was interesting mm-hmm. because that's what, you know, the professor had said. So my CTA kind of changed from just, like, you know, a very broad, like, it's too normalized, which I still believe, but it's more like, it's from having all these conversations with people, I think a more proactive way in such a ever-evolving, like, social culture is to, like, I don't know, more of, like, the emotional appeal almost. Like, having people come in and talk about their experience with drinking and driving, or, like, driving while under the influence in general, like, bring it down to, like, a real life scenario type thing, instead of, like, faceless statistics and, like, you know, numbers thrown at you.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. I mean, in my experience, at least at this university, there's a lot of programs that the university pushes forward in order to sort of inform students about the dangers of drinking and things like that, but they're done from a very sort of authoritarian level. Like, if you want to become, like, a club officer or something like that, you have to attend a mandatory training that goes over, like, standardized drinking and, like, what a standard drink looks like. And while it's important to know these things, again, it's like what you mentioned about them being sort of faceless statistics and not a whole lot of personal, like, implications of, like, what this means in someone's day-to-day life, especially someone at this age. They're kind of being conducted by, like, older, like, faculty and older employees. So because of that, it's a lot less personal, and it doesn't have as much emotional appeal to the students that feel like it's sort of just like, oh, I have to be here. It's a mandatory thing for me to know about this, rather than really seeing, like, the value and understanding, like, the dangers of drinking and driving, because they don't feel like it appeals to them emotionally.
Yeah, I think definitely, like, putting it in perspective of, like, real-life consequences, and, like, not just, like, you know, legal consequences of, like, jail time, or, like, you know, like, the consequences you'd face, like, because of literal policy and law, but, like, mm-hmm. also the emotional damage of, like, you know, you can seriously take someone's life away, you know, because you had too much fun at a party.
I think you kind of, like, touched on it when you were talking about how your, like, call to action had, like, changed when you were writing this article, but kind of before you started writing it, what, in your opinion, like, was the most effective way to combat driving while intoxicated?
Yeah, when I was, like, in the pre-planning stages, I guess, of, like, what I think my personal take is, because, like, to assess what I thought before I started, like, reaching out to experts, I kind of, like, I don't know, that's an interesting question. I was kind of at a standstill, because as a student, I was trying to think, like, what would work on me, you know? And I do think the emotional factor is the most effective mm-hmm. in societal crises like this, where it's, like, it's so avoidable, is the thing. Like, drinking and driving, yeah. Driving while high, driving while under any influence at all, it is just extremely avoidable and doesn't need to happen at all, but it's still such a large issue in society. So, yeah, I don't know. I think, yeah, the emotional appeal, like, would, I think, have the most impact on me, so I think that's what I was leading with.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was interesting, because I definitely wasn't thinking, like, peer-oriented at first, but then talking to everyone, I, like, totally see where they're coming from. And, like, I did my own research, too, like, you know, looking at legitimate research organizations and stuff like that. And they echoed that sentiment. So it was really interesting to, like, see that, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that was it from me.
Yeah. I mean, I would like to know, I mean, how do you feel like those sort of personal implications or sort of like that emotional appeal could be applied on campus? Like, is it just in conversations with other peers, or do you think there's a way that that sort of gravity can be shifted towards like a larger audience at the university?
Yeah, I didn't call for anything specific in the article because I think it's just definitely more of a like foundational idea to move away from this like authoritative dictatorial sense of like throwing numbers at people. But I think, I don't know, like me personally, my ideas, I think it would be more effective to have like real people come and speak. Like, I know my high school did that. Mm-hmm. They had us do like the whole numbers and statistics thing. Like, we would do that course at the beginning of every year or whatever. And then in my senior year, they switched and had people come in and talk. And it was like an assembly for the whole school, mm-hmm. where it was like someone who either did prison time for drunk driving, like took someone's life away or something like very serious like that, or someone who lost someone to drunk driving. So I think that had way more of an impact on people and me. I know there's a lot of like ways that our campus does implement like the spread of information to mm-hmm. like try and inform people to make better decisions regarding that, but I think maybe in a digital age, it'd be more of like a movie, I would think, personally.
Like kind of like one of the mandatory modules on campus, kind of how they have like civil rights training or the freedom of expression training, things
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, because that's what I'm thinking of. With the civil rights training, it's like theoretical like situations you could mm-hmm. be in and like how to act, and that's great. But I think for something like this, where it's like a social crisis, where it's like that serious, it would be more along the lines of like someone who either has served consequences for drunk driving or has like been impaired behind the wheel or has lost someone to that. Like, real life scenarios, I think, have the most impact on people.
Yeah. Absolutely. I feel like on a peer level, like, probably one of the more effective ways to do it would also just to be like kind of sharing that like disdain for it in conversation, like not just, I don't know. I think it's just like beyond conversing with people who have been like affected by drunk driving via like getting DUIs or like losing someone to like drunk driving accidents or like driving while impaired. I think just kind of like sharing like an overall like disapproval for it, like when you're like in conversations with people who are.
That's definitely something that my interviews have touched on too, like with students. They have all been like, yeah, peer pressure is really bad because they think that like if other people do it and it's okay, then it's okay for them to do it. But mm-hmm. the reverse of that is that peer pressure can be really effective in like, I don't want to say criminalizing a behavior, but like looking down on that.
Oh, for sure. Of like not even public shaming, but sort of like if someone
just
says
creating
like
a stigma. It's arguing we should be there.
It's something like that. So this is a whole different point, but like, you know, I did briefly touch on it. Like, it's you're a part of a community. Mm-hmm. As a student on a college campus, you also have the ability to like create that stigma around it. Like, don't let this be so normal, you know?
Yeah, and you owe it to your community to kind of look out for them.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, thank you for stopping by to talk about this.
You're welcome, great anytime.
We'll see you later. Maybe see you very later. Soon.
Wow. See you.
Okay, goodbye.
Goodbye.
For our news story this week, we have a story written by assistant editor Emily Hernandez about the ASI food pantry, specifically about their recent decision to increase their hours and also the item limit that students can kind of grab from the food pantry.
Yeah, so the ASI food pantry is just a room on campus that also is a resource for students that are facing levels of food insecurity. It's a place where they can go pick up some fresh produce, snacks, things like that. Free of charge from ASI. You just have to make an appointment at the TSU.
Mm-hmm.
And recently they've decided to extend their hours on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday mornings by opening 1 hour earlier, which makes room for some extra appointments that could help out students that are facing further issues with food.
Yeah, and the pantry is specifically located in TSU room 129, and I think it's a pretty sizable amount of additional appointments that they're kind of incorporating with this like extension of hours. It was previously 828 weekly appointments, but with the
extension of the hours, they would be able to increase that number to 972 weekly appointments.
Yeah, and the ASI food pantry already sees a good amount of traffic. According to the article, they had 3,456 scheduled appointments in just the past month prior to these hours being increased. So adding on these time slots would allow even more students to sort of use this resource that the campus provides. And in addition to that, they've also teamed up with other departments in order to sort of help students out with managing their food situations. Namely, they've been working with Titan Wells Chomp, which is the Cooking Healthy and Optimal Movement program. And that allows them to sort of add additional resources onto what the pantry is already able to provide.
Mm-hmm. And then I think that provision of the resources and the extension of the hours, it helps a lot of students who are, like, facing that food insecurity. It gives them, like, kind of a really accessible option on campus, and especially because a portion of students are going to be seeing kind of, or a portion of students who use things like SNAP cards are going to be seeing kind of, like, gaps in their, like, income to be spent on food and stuff. So the food pantry operates as kind of, like, a resource to fill in that gap.
Definitely. It does look to bridge the gap, and they're doing more than just supplying food to students. They're also teaming up with CalFresh Outreach to host some events that allow students to enroll in other programs like CalFresh in order to help students access a couple more food-based resources to help, like, limit the amount of food insecurity on our campus.
Mm-hmm. And in an interview with Christina Cardenas, the ASI Director of Communications and Outreach, they kind of discussed how the food pantry is open to all students, while programs like CalFresh kind of, like, ask you to apply, and they only take, like, eligible students. The food pantry is something that is open for just any students who make an appointment.
Yeah. In her interview that was included in the article, she talks about how there's no need to prove how badly you need the food. There's no level of eligibility. It's simply scheduling an appointment through their website, which allows you to go in and then grab the resources you need. They did also increase not only their hours, but also the amount of resources students are able to grab. Prior to this increase, students were able to grab 5 staple items and 5 snacks, but alongside their increase in hours, they're also allowing students to grab up to 8 staple foods and 8 snacks. So that also further helps students, you know, battle against food insecurity and make sure that students are fed on campus. There are a couple exemptions to that, such as rice and beans, but stuff like unlimited bread is now possible, as well as fruits and vegetables and other produce.
The article also talks about some pop-ups that the ASI Food Pantry is going to be hosting during the month of November, the first one being from November 13th from 3 to 5 p.m., and then the second one being from November 18th from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. In the Central Quad. And it's kind of like an opportunity for students to come and, like, grab some food from the ASI pantry. They're encouraging students to bring their own reusable bags that they can fill with groceries. And there's also another aspect where they're going to be able to learn free recipes.
Yeah, and we'll get into that a little bit later in the episode. But overall, it seems like the ASI food pantry is looking to just increase their resources to help students overall feel a little bit more comfortable and feel like they're a little bit more sustained on campus. Have you visited the food pantry before?
I have not had a chance to yet because I never make appointments.
I have not made my own appointment, but I have been in there when another friend of mine has made an appointment. So I've been able to see what the food pantry does have to offer. And they have some pretty good stuff. They pick up stuff. They take donations as well.
Oh, that's good.
So they have a lot of food that's fresh and also local from, like, local grocery stores, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And overall, they have a pretty solid variety. I've seen some, like, low-key some stuff that I wouldn't expect to see in there sometimes.
Yeah? What was your craziest find in the food pantry?
They had this really crazy, like, pineapple orange juice one time when I went. And I asked my friend, I was like, bro, just please grab a bottle for me, please.
Hey, Titans. This is Jaden Lovelady, the editor-in-chief of the Daily Titan. Stay connected and follow us at the Daily Titan on social media, and be sure to pick up an extra special copy of our wellness tabloid on campus this week in the orange newsstands. And if you want more stories, check us out online.
Loki, that story about the food pantry had me a little hungry.
Yeah, but do you know how to cook?
Some would say.
Yeah? Well, some don't, and that's why Titan Whale and the ASI Food Pantry are actually partnering up to host a series of ongoing events through their Cooking Healthy and Optimal Movement Program, or CHOMP.
Mm-hmm.
Great acronym, by the way.
I agree. That's great.
Yeah, so ASI's Food Pantry and Titan Whale are partnering up to do a series of events that teach students not only how to shop for groceries, but also how to put them to use.
This first installation of the series was in a... It, like, wanted to teach students how to meal prep throughout the week, and they had a variety of options for students with, like, differing diets. I think the article talks about how they were preparing both vegan chili and chicken salad.
Yes. And not only did they just focus on, like, how to cook these foods, but they also talked about the importance of just, like, maintaining proper health and proper nutritional habits. So the event also focused on how to portion properly, how to season for taste, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was less about just, like, following a step-by-step instruction and more about finding comfortability within the kitchen and also the collaborative element of cooking with someone else.
Yeah, and then the article also talked about that sense of community that, like, cooking with a group of people also brought to those who participated in this event. Like, you got to learn with other people, seeing other people kind of gain skills that they hadn't previously had previous to the workshop, kind of, like, encourage more people to try.
Definitely. The article did focus a little bit on, like, the sort of little victories people kind of have in the kitchen. Things like, there was an interview in here. This article is written by Adriana Barriga Rueda, who's one of our staff writers here.
Yeah.
And she got to do some interviews at the event, and one of the ones that I really appreciated reading was from Emily Andrade, who's a second-year psychology major, and she was talking about how when they were cutting jalapenos for one of the recipes, she was able to see someone really make progress and kind of feel more confident in their knife skills and in their ability to sort of meal prep and kind of take care of themselves.
I feel like, yeah, and then I feel like on that note, it is a great series to have in college because for a lot of people, it is, like, their first time living alone. For, like, some people, it might be their first time, like, actually having to, like, cook for themselves. So it kind of just, like, provides that education about, like, meal prep and kind of just, like, overall nutrition that could, like, serve a lot of people who maybe hadn't had the chance to learn that.
Absolutely, because cooking is one of those, like, sort of survival skills that we don't think too often about just because there's so many options that are convenient. You know, there's the TSU, Carl's Jr. on campus, different ways to sort of get food. But just because that food's available doesn't always mean it's the healthiest for you. And being able to sort of have these events that focus not only on being able to make something, but make something that's healthy, makes you feel fulfilled and feel balanced, it's sort of an underrated survival skill that a lot of students don't necessarily practice because, you know, they grow up at home having either home-cooked meals or other situations that allow them to sort of not have to worry about learning how to cook. So having events like this not only brings them together, but also brings them into an area where they should be building their skills.
I agree. And then the next installation of this series, I think it's so cute. It's called the Rise and Shine Remix Breakfast Three Ways.
I'm loving these titles.
It's gonna be on November 7th. Yeah, every workshop has its own, like, specific, like, theme, and it's gonna focus on, like, a specific type of food. So do you think that you'll be there?
At that one?
Yeah.
I'm honestly not sure, because I have a pretty solid breakfast routine, personally.
Okay. But what's your go-to breakfast?
My go-to breakfast is two eggs, a tortilla, and some fruit on the side.
That's really good, actually.
Yeah. I don't like bread that much, so I go for a tortilla. That's a personal take. But I do want to know, what's your favorite thing to cook in the kitchen, if at all?
I think it kind of changes. Recently, it's been steak pasta. Like, I get little, like...
Ooh!
Ah.
Okay, that's a good... Okay.
I get little, like, steak bites, and I season them in a crazy way. I think I just chronically, like, over-season my
food. No, but really, I think sometimes you just kind of have to do it.
And then I'll make my steak, and then I'll make my, like, pasta or rice if I want to get a little crazy. And then if it is rice, I'll, like, get, like, whatever vegetables I have, like, left over in my fridge, and I'll just, like, combine it all together.
Oh, yeah, no, you gotta put the leftovers to use.
If it's pasta, low-key, same thing. Just, like, and then it's kind of just, like, a jumble of whatever I have, and it tastes so good. What are your favorite recipes?
Ooh, if I really got time on my hands, I'm making shakshuka. No question. I'm making shakshuka, question. Yeah, it's a lot of pantry ingredients. So, I mean, like, sun-dried tomatoes, things that you could kind of just buy once and sort of just have for a couple months and things like that.
I love a good one-pan recipe, I have to say,
it's honestly so great. And, I mean, I love eggs. Mm-hmm. So, just, it's an easy way to just incorporate eggs. And you could serve it over rice, serve it over toast, serve it over tortillas. But if I'm really just going for, like, I got 5 minutes in the kitchen, I need to make something happen fast.
Yeah.
I make a mean quesadilla. I make a mean quesadilla.
That's good.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't think we can talk about this anymore.
No, I think we just need to go make food right now. Yeah.
Like, yeah, we gotta go.
All right, then.
Okay.
All right, then. We're gonna kick it on over to our sports desk with our makeshift sports correspondent, but real-life digital managing editor, Sergio Gonzalez, to tell us about the most recent updates with women's soccer. So, Sergio, how recent are these updates?
These updates are pretty recent. This game actually just wrapped up a couple of hours ago on Sunday night.
Oh, wow.
This is crazy. How did that game go?
I know. We got breaking news on the podcast.
You're hearing it here first.
I know, right?
For real.
The game went in favor of the Titans.
Okay.
They won 1-0 in what they call the Big West Championship. It's not the actual championship. It's the name of the tournament. But it is a first round. So now they move on to the conference semifinal. But it's their first time doing so since 2019.
Oh, wow.
Not too bad.
Yeah. a lot of differences in the squad. What sort of were the highlights of this team tonight?
It was kind of a funny one. So they held the other team scoreless. That's been, like, their strong point all season. Like, their defense has been, like, pretty much, like, the best team they have to offer. But obviously, like, they're very well-rounded. But they allowed an own goal at the very end.
Oh, yeah?
You know what an own goal is?
I do know what an own goal is.
Yes, it's when the team scores on themselves. That's what Cal State Bakersfield did in the 89th minute of the game.
Wow, that's they scored crazy. On their own goal.
I know.
Oh. Insane.
Literally.
What were the reactions on the field like at that moment?
I saw a clip. I mean, obviously, I wasn't there, but they seemed, like, shocked, but almost, like, too shocked to, like, react, which I feel like it's, like, a little bit funny, but it's also, like, I don't know, that's sports.
That's a valid response.
No, yeah.
And in the 89th minute, what are you going to do at that point?
Right?
You have, like, literally, I want to say they had, like, a minute 20 to, like, make something happen, and even then, that's, like, a whole lot of...
Is this, like, common in soccer?
No, like, honestly, imagine, yeah. Like, very last second, like, they were holding it down until they couldn't, but... Mm-hmm. Sucks for Cal State Bakersfield. They had a good test at Fullerton because they played them in their most recent game, their last regular season game.
Right.
3 nights ago.
Dang. So this,
like,
is a fresh one.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this is, like, fresh. Like, they just faced this team. They had to make the necessary adjustments, and they didn't. That's what happens.
So what was the final score on this game tonight?
This one was 1-0.
Oh, and it was just that own goal.
Yeah,
that
it was just that one goal. It was 0-0 throughout. Wow. Fullerton could not persevere through. And yeah, they cost themselves in the very end.
You know what? It's a different meaning to winning by any means.
Exactly.
So what can we look forward to from Fullerton in the next game?
Yeah, so their next game is going to be on Thursday, and they're going to be playing against the number 2 seed at Cal Poly, who gave them trouble before. They played them once, and they lost them on the road.
What was that score like?
2-0. But they're going to be playing at a neutral site from here on out. So last game at Fullerton was today. They're going to be playing at Cal State Northridge, even though they will be playing Cal Poly. But hopefully that gives them some sort of, like, ease, you know, because, yeah, like, they had played them beforehand on the road and they struggled, so now it's, like, a bit of a neutral side. Like, both teams are in the same boat, but hopefully they can come out on top. They've had a great year, like, Fullerton. Like, they're had 14 wins to their name, which is a lot for soccer.
Definitely. I feel like we only talk about their wins on this podcast because that's all they do.
Exactly. Nowadays. And, like, kind of unfamiliar territory because I feel like it doesn't happen too often with some of these sports.
No, that's why we got to appreciate it in the moment.
Exactly. But yeah. Me, myself, I would show up to a good chunk of these Big West, like, playoff games for, like, multiple sports. And I accumulated, like, my total record when I go, and they have won 0 games and lost 7.
Wow.
So,
do you think you might be the reason for that?
I might be, but I was talking with my good buddy and our sports editor, Nick Wire.
Shout out to Nick Wire.
Assistant sports editor, Justin Rosette, who were both at the game today.
Mm-hmm.
And I was telling them that maybe it's a good thing that I was not going today because I did not want to pay that forward once again.
Right, especially at a game like this when it's really, exactly, when it really matters. Mm-hmm. Till then, though, we'll see you.
Okay.
See you.
See you next time.
And that's it for this week's episode of DT Pod. Be sure to pick up a copy of the Daily Titan on campus or check us out at dailytitan.com to read the articles mentioned in today's episode. Thank you all for listening. And as always, if you like us, we love you.
Alright Titans, before you get out of here, you know we gotta get thankful for just one moment, so stay with me while I give a couple thank yous to some important people that work on this episode. So first of all, we're gonna give a big old thank you to our executive producers, Sergio Gonzalez and Jaden Lovelady. We also gotta give another big old thank you to Bijan Shusharisade for supplying the music in this episode. Another big thank you going out to our producer, Michelle King. And another thank you is going out to our assistant producers, Giselle Medina and Raniel Santos. And the biggest thank you of them all is going out to all of you guys for tuning into today's episode. Make sure you pick up a copy of the tabloid this week and stay tuned for more articles from Daily Titan. Thank you.